This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Ahmad Farah Ahmad.
I'm Vizla Kumarasan.
And this is Digital Desires, the show that explores how screen culture is changing human interaction. We are joined this week by Uma Pagan Ambige Pagan. Welcome to the show, man.
Hello all, my first time. Very exciting.
So we're going to talk basically about how screen culture, screen interaction, or digital democracy has been influential in the past general elections. And what better than to have you on the show, since you were covering it pretty extensively for days. It doesn't look like you've gotten any sleep since.
I've gotten very little sleep since pre-polling, polling. Yeah, I was out at quite a few traumas, not just in KL, but in our surrounding environs as well. And it was a very, very exciting time because outside of the screen culture, I mean, a lot of us, when we're in KL, we seem to get our news, or at least the feel on the ground, from what we see on Twitter, on WhatsApp, on Facebook. And it's a different feel when you're actually there.
Yeah.
It's really electric, irrespective. I mean, even the smaller BN Charamas that I went to, which are like 25 people in a restaurant, 30 people in a restaurant, still there is a feeling of, I don't know, electric is the best word to describe it, right? There's passion there.
Well, I have a BN supporter friend who, you know, despite kind of nursing his wounds now after the loss, he said that there was something quite magnificent about seeing the party fall apart, because it was unthinkable for the longest time. It was like watching the Titanic sink or something.
It was unthinkable until Wednesday night. We still thought they were going to win. Every poll, every statistic showed that even if it was a slimmer majority, that Najib Razak would return to power.
Yeah. We were, throughout the unfolding of the results, glued to the screen, though. And what kind of dimensions does that add to just our understanding of politics, our relationship to politics? There is a proximity now to these figures running for office, to these figures competing for elections that previous elections maybe did not afford as much of, right? So now everything is tweetable. Now everything is sort of just quote-unquote within reach. So what's the psychological dimension of that experience like, Vizla?
Okay. I had my computer screen, my iPad, and my phone. And each one of these had different websites. And on my phone, I was switching websites, okay? And between that also, I was getting news from Twitter. And a lot of this, I think, came from the fact that my television... Oh, on top of that, my TV
of course,
as well. Yeah,
right.
My television was telling me nothing. All right, all my news websites was telling me nothing. And I knew a lot was happening.
Yeah.
It was 11 o'clock at night. There was no reason why the results shouldn't be out, but the results weren't out. There was no logical reason why the results from Sabah and Sarawak were coming, but the results from Peninsula were just not coming through. So I think a lot of my overenthusiasm with all my screens came from the fact that I couldn't trust anything.
Right, right.
And also, I'm very aware of the history of Malaysia and how a lot of the institutions have been built in favor of the former government. And that was also fueling a lot of the anxiety that the news that I was getting was not accurate.
Yeah.
And also, those institutions are fearful.
Yes,
well.
Absolutely. That is on top of all that.
Yeah,
yes.
On top of all that, they're afraid if they misstep, their jobs are on the line, maybe even their families, something might happen, they're threatened, all kinds of stuff, right? So all of that's happening. I mean, a bit of inside baseball for you. Even here, we had a lot of information coming because obviously we have other sources on the ground who are WhatsApping us and calling us and telling us about the results and what's happening at the counting centers and all of that stuff. But we can't report that. And we can't even say it's from an unofficial source. I mean, we can, and there's nothing wrong with it because it is an unofficial source. But the risk that we run, of course, is if Barisan Nasional had won and if they were upset with us, they will take it out on us on retrospect.
Absolutely. Right, there was that kind of fear as well.
You know, you can get your license revoked and you can get all of that stuff. So we actually had a rule. Yes, you can report unofficial counts and you can say where the source is from, but don't call anything, even if you see other people call it, until SPR says something.
Yeah.
Yes. And all of us were collectively cursing and swearing at the SPR spokesperson at every news conference that was held.
And that's the paradox of power, right? In that the more power you have, the more privilege you have, the more you have to worry about, right? And that's
the more you're responsible for.
Yeah, the more you're responsible for, or the more you have to be vigilant about, the more you overthink, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's a reflection of the government's struggle, right? Quote unquote neurosis, in that they control so much of how information flows, but that, you know, they become paranoid and to the point where it no longer becomes effective, right?
Yeah.
So this is the interesting paradox, right? In that while we always laud the digital age for the free flow of information, we talk about how we're more interconnected than ever, there's a madness to it that comes out during the elections, right? False information, people getting very speculative.
Oh my God, and the number of WhatsApp messages.
Yeah,
I can't.
I couldn't. Again, and all those pictures of goodness knows what was that was being passed around through WhatsApp messages.
And we're talking completely false. I mean, there wasn't even a hint of truth in some of them. The kind of stuff we were getting on election night. And of course, it creates suspicion, panic. Mm-hmm. In an environment,
it was clogging up the internet, and I wanted my information fast.
Yeah, but in an environment where already everyone is so on edge, right? Because we have been trained for the better part of 60 years that if anything goes wrong, there will be blood on the streets.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the kind of indoctrination we've had. So much so that there are people of a certain generation who may not necessarily even like the former ruling government, but go, you know what? I'm voting for it for safety and peace. I just don't want to rock the boat.
Yes. And of course, there was a symbolism in the dates as well, right?
Right. Especially the weekend.
The weekend, which was closely. Exactly.
Now, is the chaos a part of the democracy that we have to face nowadays, right? Because for the longest time, democracy is always quoted with, you know, as a sphere of rationality, as people power, and so forth. But what moves it? And what kind of gets us hooked are oftentimes, you know, the negative emotions around it, the sort of drama, you know, that feeds into the discourse and stuff like that.
And the only reason I think we can put up with that, well, one of the reasons we can put up with that now is it's because of that you can't cheat anymore. There are all of these other options for information. There was a time when RTM and TV3 were the only place you would get election results. And now with Malaysia Kini, Undi.org, all of these places out, it was impossible because the SPR would feed it to the national news agency who would then distribute it to channels and there was only one source of information. For now, you can question that information. And a lot of us knew who won by about midnight, right? I mean, you kind of figured it out based on all the rumors and the big names that had fallen. And I think if it wasn't for democracy, internet, screen culture, all of this stuff, that wouldn't likely happen.
No, but what you also described was also how a democratization of information happened.
Correct.
Right? But you don't need to rely on just one source for that information. Information was also coming from elsewhere. However, we need to question
my uncle in Klang, you know what I'm saying?
I was going to say that because some of this is, you know, we are living in an age where people are panic sending messages. And some of it is like really fake news lah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this is where I feel that we talk about the information sharing, but the anger, right? Sometimes just the very low-down rage that accompanies a lot of political dissatisfaction.
Hang on. I'm not ready to talk about anger and rage yet. I'm still on anxiety. Okay.
Okay, so euphoria has made way to anxiety. We haven't reached anger and rage yet.
No, not yet. Because after elections, I woke up the next day expecting, you know, a new prime minister sworn in. And I had a whole day of nail-biting, hair-pulling drama waiting for that
But
to
I think the anxiety is still, I mean, granted there. But what brought Najib down? Right, it wasn't the sophisticated Tony Pua sort of discourse.
No, this is correct.
But it was a lot of just base emotions, right? And that's sort of what pushes a lot of digital democracy as well. It's not necessarily a technocratic discourse, but just people who are pissed off, right?
Yeah.
They use the screens they have just to just to diss him.
Right? No, I mean a perfect
that's the
example
beauty of it too. I find it very remarkable.
On pre-polling on Tuesday night. If it wasn't, and it could have only happened in the last 5 years, right?
Mm.
The fact that you had Facebook Live, the fact that Tun Dr. Mahathir had a platform to put out his speech, no opposition politician would have ever had that platform. Live streaming has come to be the way it is over the last 5 years. And I mean, simultaneously with a speech from the Prime Minister attracting a bigger audience, unheard of.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, for the longest time, the opposition have been cut off from everything.
Yep.
And now there are these opportunities.
Yeah. But, you know, aside from just using social media to vent anger at Najib, there was also the positive way in which social media was used, right, to rally people. Right? There was a lot of anger I felt about the, you know, having elections on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
and the kind of movements that arose around that to address that. Pulang Mengundi.
Undi Rabu.
Undi Rabu, all kinds of other things.
No, I mean, anger is positive. Because I think sometimes we tend to think of...
Anger was used positively.
And in democracy, that's the hardest thing, right? You can't curate the exact kind of emotions you need to move power, to challenge power, right? Sometimes where there are little options to really change things, you know, the base emotions just take over, right? And some of the things that they say about Rosma is plain sexist, right? But that's the kind of things that shakes power, right? So I think that's one thing we have to acknowledge too when we kind of laud the progress that digital democracy allows, because democracy is not always pretty, right? Revolutions get people hanged and executed, right? So, and that's, I think, what is also shaking the system.
Sorry, did I sound like I was lauding it? The internet's a horrible place. It's a horrible, horrible place.
You know, I'm just exposing the range of, you know, discontents, right, that we find. Some of it is well articulated, but some are just very infantile, right? But it shakes the system. And I say, you know, more power to that, I feel. Let's take a break, though. We'll be right back just to unpack more about the digital democratic implications of the general elections that just passed. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman alongside Vizla Kumarisan. And with us this week is Uma Pagan Ambige Pagan. And this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to me, Ahmad Fuad Rahman alongside Vizla Kumarisan. This is Digital Desires. Joining us this week is Uma Pagan Ambige Pagan. We are talking about digital democracy in light of GE14. Now, we gave a good view of what happened locally, but to what extent is this a reflection or just another moment in the broader waves of drastic changes that digital democracy has created? For example, Trump, right? Trump was an outsider. He used social media as well, and people saw that as an alternative, quote-unquote, channel to change things as well. So we're seeing this. I mean, Joko, we kind of experienced the same thing
he
as
did.
Well, right?
Yes.
Oh, can I also say, I mean, whoever is managing Tun M's Instagram feed is genius because it's all about him and Tun Siti Asmah. And it's a very well-curated story of their relationship, of these two old people going down to the ground again to save Malaysia, their love story, all of that stuff. I mean, that really, they know how to tap into the brain of the Melayu, you know, and it really works.
Seniority. And of course, there was that sentimental video with that kid, right?
Like
a week before, right? Atok dah this, atok dah that, it's time for atok.
And know? Even after he won, there was this short video of about 15 seconds of... Tun Siti holding his hand at the palace and saying a little prayer. It was the sweetest thing.
It's drama mingo ini for
it's
elections.
It's so good.
No, but that taps into something that's also quite base in all of us, I think. This idea that there is this ideal partner for us. You know, hashtag relationship goals was going around
with this
video as well. And that transcends like ethnicity, I think. Now, all of us, like...
But I don't mean to be cynical about it, and I don't know if this was going through the mind of the person posting those videos, but there is nothing in sharper contrast to Najib and Rosma than than that. And I think was the message. I mean, that's why it worked so well, right? Because you've heard the stories about Najib and Rosma, and you don't know if any of it's true. But, you know, all of that, I guess all of that gossip and fear-mongering was there. And then you see these people who could potentially be living in that house and running the country. And suddenly you're like, oh, why not them? It's very cunning.
Yes, this is true.
And I mean, it's sweet. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But... whoever's behind it, it's a bit of a mastermind.
Yes. And then, of course, the day after elections, there were also the... can I use the word explosive? Instagram post.
Which one? Which one? So many.
Oh, sorry. allegedly Rosma's daughter.
Azreen, I think.
Correct. I mean, she's come out 3 years ago with a very explosive post as well.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that.
And she had written a really harsh post.
About her brother at that time.
Her brother, but she said, you know, I still love him. He's my brother. And she blames her mum for even leading her brother down this path kind of thing. And then, yes, of course, this post.
Yeah. And then, you know, again, like all the gossip and all of us came out and we all wanted to share this. I don't know how many WhatsApp messages and was...
I wonder how much
timeline,
of...
Twitter timeline and for I don't know how long.
I wonder how much of the resonance of that plot, right, is really unique to how, you know, we're very filial culture.
Yes.
Right? And our politics filial too. PKR has its family, DAP has its family, and of course the UMNO elite. they're all related to each other, except for Mahathir and Patlah, right? But for the most part, there are these ties. And then, of course, then Mahathir, like you said, and Titi Asmah plays up that sort of the stable family as an analogy for the stable government.
Correct. Right? Yeah.
And so we love our families here.
We do love our families, and which is why there was also a mixed bag of comments to Azreen's post. Mm. So there were some people who were like, oh, well, she's your mother. You have to forgive her anyway, right? Yes. And that was one line. And then the other line were the more political line who was just like, oh, you know, you poor girl, you had to put up with all of this. You know, she's a monster, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, Malaysia is very divided.
Yeah. And now the tone has also shifted quite drastically because we are in that point where we're like, a lot of people are like, Allah, maafkan lah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Too.
And it's just been in a few days, and that shift has already happened.
But I feel, that is such a cultural thing, though, in the sense that we don't like seeing crimes committed. Mm. But there's also a line on how we treat the people who've committed those crimes. Mm-hmm. And there's a culture of forgiveness that seems to bring us closer to God, or at least we believe it does.
Depending on what kind of crime it is.
And I think that's the problem with 1MDB and everything that's gone on. People still find it very hard to connect that crime back to their everyday. Mm.
But largely because Najib is not very connectable either, right? I mean, that's the irony of the fact that his face is everywhere, but he never really could play the image up, you know, to the way that, say, maybe Dr. Mahathir can. Right, there's a warmth that is almost universal in Tun M.
You're right,
but you just don't see it in Najib Razak, right? And in a game,
those posters are all over the country, and all I'm thinking is he doesn't know what to do with his hands.
Yeah,
it's not like it's outstretched and welcoming. It's not like he wants to give you a hug. It's like halfway close towards his body, and he's not sure what to do with his hands.
It became a meme. People made a meme out of it. So I think, like you said, because there's so much riding on just how information is more visual now, it's so more shared, you got to play that game. And Najib just felt like fish out of water.
But the whole game, right, was so miscalculated. I mean, all of the videos, you know, we're talking about, I guess, the digital game that these guys were playing. They spent an absolute fortune on propaganda videos that were direct, straight up, BN, you know, featuring Najib and Khairi, etc. And they had a whole barrage of propaganda videos that had nothing to do with them, that they tried to brand as something completely neutral.
Yes.
But the messaging was so off-key.
Yeah.
It didn't connect to the voter on the ground.
No, it didn't.
I don't know if that celebrity video idea still works. I don't know if the everyday person suffering from bread and butter issues cares what the seemingly rich dude has to say about going out and voting.
Yeah. And I think as much as things like Facebook Live and everything worked the benefit of Tun M, the other thing I think really appealed to people was the fact that he was going around. This is a man who's 92 years old, and he was going around the entire country and giving charamas every night to packed crowds, and people were moved by that. So despite what you saw only on your screens, the fact that you could relate to him on this level also, I think, moved people and affected the way they voted in the end.
It's a testament to his dynamism, right? Because I think around this time last year, he did that mannequin challenge too.
That's right.
He's a 19-year-old guy. I didn't do a mannequin challenge, right? But he did it, right? So he's in step. He's amazingly in step with times.
And also, I mean, I'll tell you, I won't tell you who told me, but there was a political operative who was telling me, he said it was incredible. Apparently, all Tun M told him was, you tell me where you need to be, where I need to be. Marginal seats, whatever, I will go there. Because they knew they needed to roll Tun M out, right? To get the groundswell, to get the support. But here was a 93-year-old guy traversing the country. And there is this mentality, and it's a cultural, I think, for all Malaysians, not just Malays, that when you're that age, you should be at home. You should be taken care of. Yeah. You should be praying.
Yes.
And he is a man, 90 years old, with his wife, saving, I'm using air quotes, saving the country, right? And I think that worked. That was great propaganda.
Absolutely.
Is there a flip side to this? And I worry that we're not talking about youths as much as we are talking about him, because he's taken such center stage in the way that we've imagined the changes, right? Like, just 5 years ago, the last election was all about youths, new faces. And while there were youths here, the fact that we saw Mahathir, Daim, Rafida Aziz at the sort of peak of these campaign periods, right? I think risk obscuring the fact that it was also changed by youth participation.
Yeah, so 21 to 39 year olds made up over 40% of the vote, I believe. That was the statistic, right? Mm-hmm. So it was about youth. But I was in Langkawi before the election, but it was already announced he was standing in Langkawi. And all of the young waiters at the hotel and stuff like that were gushing about Tun Nam. They were too young. They wouldn't have even lived through his time in office, right? I think they were born in the mid-90s even. But they were talking, and I can only assume they're getting these stories from their parents. But if these young people were gushing about him, then somehow this seems to have translated. Their concern was, of course, apparently their parents still thought he was with BN. So they had to tell the parents, actually, dear, I took a partida. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I think the youth were quite influenced by that message too.
I think they were influenced, but it hasn't really, it didn't really personify youth. The movement felt like old UMNO taking over new UMNO. I mean, that's one narrative, right? I don't want to be cynical, but when we think about...
No, on the stage, it was the old cabinet. You have every right to be cynical.
Pretty much. So, where is the face of the future, right? It's not quite evident, or it doesn't quite stand out.
You mean it's not Kyrie? No, I joke.
Well, there is the youngest parliamentarian ever elected.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the 22-year-old Prabhakaran.
Yes,
that's true too. Right?
What a twist of fate.
Exactly.
That's true too.
And a whole host of very young DAP.
Yeah,
DAP who made headway in Johor. Right,
yeah.
Who actually won Johor. And
Syed Saddiq, how can we forget him?
Syed Saddiq, of course. So perhaps there are youth. Maybe they're eclipsed by Tun Nam. But there are youth.
Yeah.
But also, I think over the next 5 years, or however long this government is in power, that's when they get to shine. That's when, I mean, I still consider...
That's the hope, yeah.
I still consider the likes of Tony Pua and Ong Ken Meng youth-ish, you know, compared to everyone else in the party. They're young faces, right? And so I think Hannah Yeo and Iza and Fahmi and all of these young people...
That makes me feel a lot better too,
actually. I think they have time to debate in parliament and actually bring out these issues that matter to young people. And I'm hoping that they take these stories, because God knows if they don't, we'll be here to take them out for it. But you know what I mean, right? I think they've got time. I think over this next month or so, as we see a cabinet being set up, as we see the panel of eminent persons try and fix the economy and all of that stuff, I think the focus will be on the Prime Minister, maybe the Deputy Prime Minister, and of course Anwar Ibrahim. Don't forget Anwar Ibrahim. The focus is going to be on that. But the real action starts, I think, when Parliament first sits.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all of these people are just going to be communicating directly with you via Twitter. They already are. And I think that's why it's going to be a really interesting Parliament session.
Yeah. And it's also very fascinating because we don't have... Parliament sittings are not on TV, right?
You can watch them live streaming, yes.
Live streaming?
Not on RTM.
Yes, correct. No. There was this debate a few years ago where it was decided the Malaysian public are not mature enough to handle...
I remember that.
...watching
yes.
that. Mm-hmm. And here we are, right, taking control, taking back that discourse through social media...
Yeah.
And now also being able to contribute back to the conversation via social media.
Well, there's a paradox that we're encountering here, right? In that there's so much about social media that's said as a game changer, but it's, of course, centered on the image of a 93-year-old man. So, I mean, that's an interesting contradiction. But all of this paints a picture of a very paternal politics, right? We talk about the filial sensibility, right? So the guaranteeing father as an analogy to stability, for example.
Yes.
Right? So, it's an interesting tension.
Which has always been the dynamic with especially the Malays, right? Mm-hmm. UMNO speaks as if UMNO knows best. They will look after you.
Yeah.
Father knows best.
Ayahanda, right? That's the kind of...
Exactly.
Okay, but if you look at it, even internationally, that's what the discourse is. That's why it's so important to put political candidates with their families.
Yeah.
Because we just like Justin Trudeau a lot.
Exactly. That is supposed to be, you know, the father image, the parent image, the responsible parent is supposed to be an analogy for a responsible leader.
It feels like it's 2018 and the number of photos, just go back and look, the number of photos in our campaign of people still holding babies.
Yeah.
Still picking up babies and like kissing babies. I'm like, is that still a thing?
It's still apparently a thing. Apparently it is.
The difference then is whether or not, you know, where the kind of father we're imagining, right? So there's Macron, and then there's a great-grandfather, right?
Right.
So again, it depends on how, you know, what the range of fatherhood is as a symbol, right? So
the only difference, I think, and I could be completely off base here, but Mahathir at 93 doesn't seem to care. Like, he's old. I think he's... I don't think he's greedy for power. It doesn't feel like it.
No,
I think
no.
I
he's
really.
He's an appointment that doesn't matter.
He's achieved his legacy already. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And for me, the interesting thing is this reset, nobody else has ever, no person described as a dictator has ever been afforded this opportunity for reset. Mm-hmm. So he's apologized, which is the first step of the reset. You know, Kuan Yew died, Castro died. No one has had a chance to go back, even if it's for 2 years, and rewrite that last chapter. And so from this generation on, people are almost going to forget the sins of the past and be like, well, he's the hero that saved the country. If he can pull it off, that's insane.
It's a big if. I mean, I'm all with you there.
Oh, no, correct. It's a big if. But the opportunity, of course, crazy.
Yeah, I'm also optimistic here, and I'm thinking that perhaps this would also lend to the larger narrative of people can change.
Yes.
I've got my fingers crossed. But people can change.
Well,
but not everybody gets a second chance. So they're two different things.
So maybe then we should be more open to giving people second chances.
That's true too.
But here's the thing, right? People can change. We're hoping Mahathir changes. Lest we forget, let's hope Anwar has changed as well. You know, the Anwar from 20 years ago, we don't want back, right? And we're thinking that 20 years in prison will change a man, right? And so actually, we're hoping for everybody to change, lah.
Yeah, yeah. Hadi Awang, come on. We're waiting for you too.
Yeah, we're waiting.
Hey, with their successors, I don't think they're going to change. I think FAS is going to double down, man.
So, and I love paradoxes, and this election is full of them, right?
Yes.
It keeps us talking, keeps us guessing, and interested, right? So, nothing is set in stone, therefore, we are more hooked. So, any concluding thoughts on this topic?
Just, you know, I'm going to echo what Karim Razlan said when he was on The Breakfast Grill on Monday, Monday after the election. He just said, relax. Have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
It's only been a few days. You got to be in it for the marathon, right?
Yeah.
I mean, don't wear yourself out.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was reflecting on this for a panel I had a couple of days ago. And I think, you know, I suppose it's relevant to talk about here as well. The elections just demonstrated that people have power. And we shouldn't forget that over the next 5 years, over the next 10 years. And that power is in our hands, in our screens. We have social media. That's an excellent way for us to hold our leaders accountable. We did it once, we can do it again. We can get people out of power. And we shouldn't forget that. We should not become apathetic. We should be, you know, very wary of becoming a little too relaxed. Not too many cups of coffee.
All right, on that note, thanks for listening. Again, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio or email the show at biggerpicture@bfm.my. Thanks again, Uma.
Pleasure.
Once again, signing off is me, Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, alongside Vizsla Kumarasan and his Digital Desires on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.